You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. So with restaurants and hotels and businesses closed, many large farms are destroying millions of pounds of fresh goods that no longer have a market. And here in Wisconsin, some dairy farmers are dumping their fresh milk into lagoons each day. And the waste. Dairy Farmers of America, it's the country's largest dairy cooperative. It estimates that farmers are dumping as many as 3.7 million gallons of milk daily. Farmers, how has your operation been affected by the pandemic? Do you have a market for your milk, your crops, your meat? Have you had to destroy or reduce yields? We're at 800-642-1234. Ryan Elby is a dairy farmer in West Bend. He operates Golden E Dairy with his family. Ryan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
What does your situation look like today on the farm? How are you coping? What is it like?
Today looks very different from the past several weeks. We are shipping milk currently back to the dairy in limited quantities, but at least some of our milk is ending up on store shelves.
How long has this been going on where you've had to dump milk?
So the evening of March 31st, we were informed. We were asked if we'd begin dumping milk, and then later that evening we were informed we had to begin dumping milk, all of our milk. And a little misconception, it didn't just happen for a few days. It drug out until late last week, so almost an entire month of all of our milk went down the drain.
Did you anticipate that this call would come?
No, you definitely do not plan in the agricultural industry to waste your products. That's for sure. You do everything you can to not waste any little seeds of grain, all that sort of stuff, let alone hundreds of thousands of gallons of milk.
So in normal times, where was your milk going after it left your farm? What was the supply chain like?
So a little background on that. We ship through DFA, the cooperative DFA, but 99% of our milk would go to Kemp's located in Cedarburg, just north of Milwaukee. And we haul our own milk, and we're a direct ship facility, so our milk goes on to our milk trailers, where our milkman then delivers it daily down to Kemp's, approximately 3 to 4 semi-loads a day. And then after it's off the trailer, it's out of our hands.
Have there been any alternatives floated to you about not dumping this milk? I mean, everyone wants to know, why can't this go to other places that need the milk?
Oh, gosh, yes. Actually, some ideas from across the country, let alone across the world. People in Russia contacted me, Ukraine, places like that. Their idea of making some sort of a hard cheese locally. There was a lot of make cheese, send it to cheese plants. And consumers need to remember, I can't just deliver my milk to another processor that already has farmers going there. That would greatly affect the farmers that have been going there for many, many years. Also, food pantries, a lot of people, a little bit of outcry, a lot of people reaching out, trying to get a couple gallons here and there, or a milk tanker. That's not something we are able to do. Our milk is still the raw product. We can't just pull up to a food pantry with a 7,000-gallon tanker of milk and say, here you go, disperse it throughout the community. That's a big no-no.
So it's really the supply chain, as you've displayed for us, is pretty rigid. It is really hard to move things and change things very quickly. Is that right?
Right. And then when this all happened with restaurants shutting down and stuff, they had to switch from like a food supply chain as restaurants all into retail, where people were then buying at local grocery stores. Much of our milk did go to local grocery stores in gallon jugs and such like that. But the entire market was flooded with an excess of milk, and they needed to find people to begin dumping milk before the entire market imploded. They literally needed to waste milk so it wouldn't get any worse for everyone.
We're talking with Ryan Elby, a dairy farmer from West Bend, hearing how the coronavirus pandemic has affected his farm, his dairy farm. Farmers, we'd like to hear about your situation. How has your business been affected by the pandemic? Do you still have a market for your milk or your crops or your meat? Join in with what you are experiencing, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Ryan, quantify this for us. How much milk have you been dumping each day up until you got the orders today that you could begin, sending off some of your milk supply?
Yeah, so we dumped all of our milk almost for a month after the evening of March 31st, but slowly have been able to deliver some loads. We produce around 220,000 pounds to 200 to a quarter million pounds of milk a day. We're paid per hundredweight, so we talk in pounds, not gallons. But a gallon of milk is roughly 8.6 pounds. So we, throughout the dumping, I don't have hard numbers yet, but we estimated 650 to 700,000 gallons of milk were dumped on my family's farm here in West Bend.
Walk us through the mechanics of actually dumping the milk. Where do you put it? How does that work?
Yeah, certainly. I did some interviews. Maybe your listeners saw a stainless steel pipeline with a red floor and the milk gushing out down the drain. That would have been images of my family's farm. We don't put it into milk tankers is what happens. We literally just open up the end of the pipe. We the whole process, milking cows, everything's the same, but it's not going on the milk tanker. It goes down the drain and it goes into our waste storage pits where we can properly dispose of the wasted milk.
How do you properly dispose of it? So if it's going into this storage pit, manure pit, lagoon, what happens to it?
Yeah, certainly. So it's just all mixed up with the rest of our wastewater and animal waste until it's applied to the fields, which we were working on in spring here because we need that fertilizer for the crops, for my family's crops. So because we're a larger farm, we're classified as a CAFO. So we're under different rules and regulations than many, many smaller farms across the state. So our facility was already adequate to dispose of the milk properly because we have different facilities and different restrictions in place for handling our waste. It was really easy for them to just say, you guys are good to go. You can put it in your waste pits, mix it up. And then also the way we spread our waste on our fields, that all has to be recorded and such and handed into the proper authorities like the DNR so they know what we put where and how much. So it was an easy paper trail, I guess, because we already have the rules and regulations in place.
But this is a lot of milk each day. Do you have enough capacity in your waste pit for this unexpected milk?
Yeah, certainly. So the waste pits have to be necessarily oversized for, say, a 100-year flood. I don't know the term they use, but we did have room for this wasted milk. We did dump a lot more milk than we expected, but we have had a very nice spring here, and the fertilizer applicators were able to come in and pump out our waste pits already. So if this would continue, the pits are empty, so we're good to go.
We're talking with dairy farmer Ryan Elby of West Bend. He runs Golden E Dairy with his family, hearing about his situation in dumping milk. Farmers, how is your business being affected by the COVID-19 pandemic? Do you live in a farm community? Are you worried about its stability? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll be back in just a minute with Ryan Elby here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the nation's milk supply and the widespread destruction of fresh products. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. What we do know is that there is profound economic uncertainty due to the virus, and navigating these times is a challenge for huge sectors of our economy, like agriculture, having to adjust to such a sudden change in supply demand. So what actions could the state or federal government take to address this food crisis? We're at 800-642-1234. We have Ryan Elby, whose Golden E Dairy has been dumping its daily milk output for a month. Let's take a call now. Frank is with us from La Crosse. Hi, Frank.
Hi. So I was curious what this particular gentleman's take is on the political process, given the recent money to subsidize farmers in the situation, and apparently the legislative loopholes that allow large farms to take advantage without taking care of the smaller farmers, our dairy farmers, in particular with Mr. Kine being so proud of his farm record, why is the legislation so poorly written?
Frank, thanks for the call. Ryan, what are you seeing in terms of subsidies from the USDA, from the federal government, and does it differ for small farmers?
I do not know what would differ. Right now, we're only in the payroll protection program. Other than that, for being reimbursed for our dumped milk, that is all being handled through DFA, how they're handling it and how they get paid. That I wouldn't know anything about. Mm-hmm. We would just get the check for the wasted product through DFA.
You've been told to lower milk production of your farm by 10%. How do you accomplish that?
Right. Yep. So we still want to feed our animals high-quality feeds, feed them the best we can. But to drop production by 10%, that's a challenge. I do know other cooperatives have to drop a little bit more. But realistically, we're just selling cows. We just get rid of some cows. They'll go off to, I'm sure, meat plants, stuff like that. But we don't really have any other option right now.
Is there someone to buy those cows? Because the meat industry is suffering as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I do know we dabble a little bit in the beef market, and it would have been, I believe, last Monday or two Mondays ago. I'm sorry, I don't remember. But they pretty much told us, I had some beef to ship, and they told us that they don't want them because they don't have a market for them right now. But with these dairy cows, I do know they're going to be loaded today unless something changed over the weekend. But we're not really going to be making any money off those cows, let's just say that.
Let's go to Patrick now in Milwaukee. Hi, Patrick.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. What do you see there in the agriculture industry?
So I own two farming companies that have seen completely different reactions to the pandemic. One was a microgreens company selling microgreens and herbs to some restaurants in Milwaukee. And we had just hit our 21st restaurant, kind of finding our stride, and the pandemic changed all of that. And we're now only selling to two restaurants that are still having a successful curbside delivery program. The other company, which dovetails nicely with our microgreens operation, has seen a big boom. And that is essentially an online farmer's market where we're aggregating produce from multiple farms in and around the city and providing it into a customizable farm box. And we're very happy to have started that company last year because it's serving several hundred families now in the area. And we're also able to help some of the farmers that aren't as plugged in or connected to the community via online, you know, simple and efficient methods.
Yeah, Patrick, thank you so much for explaining what those companies do. And what I hear there is value added. Ryan, have you looked to see if there are different avenues for value added? I know you had mentioned the cheese industry being one area to get your milk to.
Yeah, there are other possible options. I did have a gentleman reach out to possibly start his own bottling company of creating a more local milk product, even though milk is very local. He wanted to kind of label it and kind of use our farm that people knew what farm it came from directly. That hasn't necessarily gained traction yet, but it is a great idea. in the future, I believe.
Patrick, may I ask, will your microgreens and herbs company, will that make it through this pandemic?
You know, if we didn't have the Farm Box program to pay the bills and to sort of buttress the sales that we're now missing from the restaurants, I would not be confident that we would be able to make it, to be honest. Microgreens are one of those things, for the listeners who don't know. It's often used as a garnish. They pack a lot of flavor, but in very scary times like this, it's going to be something that a lot of chefs are going to take off of the menu immediately. And so we understand that. We're fortunate to have the Farm Box program, because I think that will allow us to sell directly to the customers. And we're also increasing the exposure of a more niche product that a lot of people aren't aware of.
Patrick, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. Let's go to Dwayne now in West Bend. Dwayne, hi.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
You may even know Ryan if you're in West Bend as well.
Me? I'm sorry, West Bend.
Oh, West Bend. Okay. carry on.
My cousins grew up summers on my cousin's farms down in Dickeyville, Wisconsin, southwest Wisconsin, and best summers of my life when I could spend 2 weeks. But it's funny, because when I turned on the radio, I just took a gallon of milk out of the freezer. I froze 3 gallons of milk because we have to quarantine for 2 weeks. And people say, you can freeze milk? I'm like, fishing camps in Canada do it all the time for their guests throughout the whole summer. It tastes just fine. But in Belgium, the point I want to make, there was a show about potatoes being thrown away in Belgium, and they just appealed to the citizenry of the country, please, just have an extra order of fries with your supper and lunch every day. And if they could just be put out appeals to the people, everybody wants the farmers to do well, especially the small mom-and-pop operations, you know.
Yeah. Dwayne, thank you for calling in with that. Ryan, what does dumping milk mean for your farm's viability, your farm's bottom line?
Oh, this is the milk dumping is greatly going to affect it. Back in December, let me just start here. The last 4 years have been not good for the agricultural industry in our area, in the dairy area. And then last December, things were really looking up. We were starting to make some money, starting to get back on our feet and really starting to go. And then this pandemic happened, and this is drastically going to affect our bottom line. We're already trying to figure out ways. We're trying to budget things differently, let alone it's springtime and we have to get crops in the ground, purchase fertilizer, pay for the seed. I know that fuel's very cheap right now, but that's still something that affects our operation. There's a lot of expense going out the door right now in springtime on farms across the country. And there's not a lot of revenue coming in.
Do you feel like you're getting solid guidance from the federal level, from your local cooperative? What are Dairy Farmers of America telling you? And is it information that is helpful to your operation?
Yeah, in the beginning, we had a very open line of communication. And at times it seemed upsetting, the lack of information at times, but I understand, this was all they were learning as they were going as well, just like everybody else in any industry in this pandemic. So I think they did the best job they could, and things change daily. Last week we got our schedule that we were supposed to be dumping this week, but things changed. Now there's a little uptick and there's more of a demand, so we're hauling in a couple loads until that demand deteriorates again. But for right now, I think they're doing the best job they can. It's all as you go. Mm-hmm. There's nothing set in stone. This hasn't happened. They can't just go and do a book and what should we do?
There isn't a playbook for this. Yeah. Right. Lori called in from Green Bay and couldn't stay with us and mentioned she used to use dry milk in her bread every week before it got too expensive. And Lori wondered why we couldn't turn some of this milk and dry it for dry milk.
Right. Just like any other, many other ideas out there, the processors can't flip a switch. I'm sure there's not any in our immediate area that powder milk, but you got to remember this giant switch in the industry. You can't just send all that milk to, say, a dry milk processor. Their facilities, their infrastructure is built on what their supply is at that time. Mm. Now, if you flip the switch and send a whole bunch of milk their way, they can't handle that switch in production. You know, there's not facilities built to be oversized, if you understand what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ryan Elby, a dairy farmer from West Bend. He operates Golden E Dairy with his family. Coming up, we continue this conversation about our food production. We talk with an ag expert on redistributing milk, cheese, and crops that have lost markets from the coronavirus. What questions do you have about our state's food production and how it's been affected by the pandemic? What would you like to share? Be part of this 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a quick mention here, as the impact of COVID-19 grows in Wisconsin, you can ask your questions about the disease. We're gathering them through our Wisconsin project. Submit your question about COVID-19, and we will do our best to run down an answer. Go to wpr.org/COVID. Right now, we're talking about how farmers are facing this worst-case scenario with markets drying up. They have little choice but to put the food they produce to waste. Dairy farmers are trying to decide between dumping the milk, as we've heard, and selling their cows for beef. And in Minnesota, tens of thousands of hogs stand to be killed but not processed into meat. According to the Minnesota Pork Producers Association, farmers have already euthanized over 3,000 pigs. What do you want to know about the status of Wisconsin's food production? What policies are needed to remedy the ag upheaval we're witnessing? Be part of this 800-642-1234. Michelle Miller is the Associate Director of the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems at UW-Madison. Michelle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate, and thanks, too, for having Ryan on. That was really helpful to hear directly from a farmer what's up.
First case scenario, yeah. So the USDA plans to buy several billion dollars in food from farmers who've lost their markets. How much of an impact will this make?
I think it should make a fairly sizable impact, although because USDA is such a big agency, it takes a lot to turn the agency around or to move it into a different direction. So it might take a little while for that to really have an immediate impact. I think long-term it'll have an impact, but just not, it isn't helping necessarily right today.
I think Ryan said that, you know, there's just not a playbook for this and what you're supposed to do. Has the USDA done this before? Is there any precedent?
Well, not really. I was on a webinar with a bunch of supply chain managers, and they said there's never been anything like this before in managing any supply chain, not to mention food. I guess the Great Depression might be the closest thing, and that's really where a lot of our programs to help farmers came about, was because of the Great Depression.
Well, the juxtaposition here is just glaring. So, you know, while we hear about the dumping the milk, the euthanizing the hogs, food banks across the country have seen an increase in need and a decrease in donations. What role do food banks and pantries play in this supply chain conversation?
They play a really critical role. As you know, a lot of people are out of work. The State Department of Workforce Development projected that for April, we would be at a 27% unemployment rate in the state. That's going from under 4% to 27%. That's a lot. And when you're not getting a break on your rent or your mortgage and you need to find some way to cover those fixed costs, people start going to their food banks for help. In Wisconsin, we have three primary food banks. We have one in Milwaukee that's run privately by Hunger Task Force. We have one in Eau Claire run by Feeding Wisconsin. And we have one in Madison, also a Feeding Wisconsin affiliated food bank. And I just want to give a shout out to the people who are running the emergency food system right now in the state. Stephanie Dorfman in Eau Claire, Sherry Tesler in Milwaukee, Jonathan Bader with the Wisconsin Community Action Program, working with all of them, and then Kitty Kokels at Department of Health Services, our state employee hero, keeping emergency food going.
Yeah, so people are talking with each other about this problem, but how are food banks being able to stock their shelves right now and to reach the farmers who've lost their markets?
Well, Feeding Wisconsin and Hunger Task Force are both private nonprofits, and so they're taking donations and then using those donations to purchase product. Hunger Task Force announced recently that they're working with Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection to participate in this Wisconsin Dairy Ready program, and they've got $1 million in donations that they're using to actually purchase product. Feeding America just announced that they're working with Kroger Company and Rural Mutual Insurance to purchase product from farmers. The Kroger program is a little bit uncertain because it's at the national level, and we don't know how much is coming down to Feeding Wisconsin. We've also got Farm Bureau, Wisconsin Farm Bureau, raising funds for Harvest of Hope. It's a special project targeted directly to farmers who are in need of financial assistance. And then we Sunday announced the Passion for Pork. It's a project with pork producers that are linking to local meat processors that have capacity to do to process meat. We've got more than 100 state-inspected meat processing plants that may have capacity to take on some of the work that the large USDA-inspected plants can't.
So the grassroots efforts and the grassroots programs are springing up. They're out there. People are making those connections in agriculture. Going back to something you said at the outset, USDA is like turning a ship. Why can't we cut through some of this bureaucracy, some of this red tape at the highest level in agriculture?
I think there has been an effort to do that. A number of the programs for emergency food have had their regulations suspended temporarily. For instance, one of the regulations says that you have to be making less than 185% of the poverty level in a month, and they changed that to weekly so that they could immediately start servicing people who had lost their jobs and knew that their income was going to be slashed. So there have definitely been efforts to do that, at least on the food side. On the farm side, there are some deeper issues, kind of structural issues to the agriculture that are causing some of these problems. And, for instance, I think it was late last week, our Senator Baldwin started working with Josh Hawley. He's a Republican senator from Missouri, to request that there be some investigation into the concentration of meat markets. You might remember that last week, Green Bay JBS processor announced a real problem with COVID in their plants.
Yes.
And JBS is one of four companies in the U.S. that control 85% of the meat production. That kind of concentration means that it's very, it makes meat processing a very vulnerable, kind of brittle supply chain. And that's why we're also blessed to have many of these small processors in the state.
We're talking with Wisconsin Agriculture Systems expert Michelle Miller. She's with us as we look at the disruption to the food supply chains caused by the pandemic. Do you work in a food bank or a pantry? How has demand changed since the pandemic? Do you work in a food processing plant or are you a farmer? How has your production changed and your output? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Michelle, scaling up for these food pantries might be an issue. Do Wisconsin's food banks and pantries, do they have the capacity to distribute perishables like cheese, like milk, and other things that need mass refrigeration?
That's a really big issue for the food pantries. There are only 14 regions in the state that have refrigeration available to take a load or a third of a load of perishable product. I'm going to name those off just so that people know. We're talking Milwaukee, Madison, Eau Claire, where the big food bank are located. And then we're also looking at Racine, Kenosha, Beloit, Janesville, The Dells, Fox Valley, Dodgeville, La Crosse, Manitowoc, Green Bay, Shawnee, Wausau, and Superior. So those communities have enough refrigeration capacity that they could actually take milk. Then if you're a town like Ladysmith, for instance, you've got need, you want to fill it, you want some milk, you have to drive, you have to get someone to drive to Eau Claire to pick up a load and bring it, and then you have to distribute it right away. Because of the lack of refrigeration capacity.
So is transportation there an issue, and being able to just have it at your disposal is not there if you don't have that refrigeration capacity?
That's right. And a lot of our rural communities are at the end of the supply line. If there is a distribution, if there's a shortage of a product, those small communities and their independent grocers are really going to feel that, and you're going to see out of stocks on those shelves. So trying to build those supply chains so that they go down into our rural communities is really critical overall. That's a problem that has been in place for some time, and has this new pandemic has just exacerbated that, just made it that much worse.
Well, let's look at a segment of the food industry. A large portion of milk produced in Wisconsin is used for cheese. How have you seen the cheese market being affected by the pandemic?
Well, for emergency food banks, we were hearing stories. Sherry Tesler from Hunger Task Force was talking about how they had to put social distancing into their food bank, which meant they could have fewer people working. And then they also had the problem of a lot of their workers are volunteers, and they're elderly volunteers, and so they weren't coming to volunteer anymore. So they weren't even able to take any cheese because they couldn't cut the cheese into smaller portions for family boxes. Cheese would come in big wheels or, 25-pound blocks, and they had to have some way to do that initial processing. I think that's why they were really excited to be able to pull together over $1 million in donations to participate in, purchasing dairy products
that are ready to go. Michelle Miller is with UW-Madison Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems. She's our guide to the sudden sharp drop in demand for fresh goods coming from farms during the pandemic and the domino effect it has across the entire food supply chain. With your questions, how is your farm doing right now? Have you had to sell off animals? What policy action do you want out of the USDA? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Farmers globally are grappling with excess supplies of their products as their harvests cannot get to their intended customers due to disruptions from the pandemic. We're looking at this through a Wisconsin lens, with still time for your questions, your insights on the food crisis. 800-642-1234. We're talking with Michelle Miller from UW-Madison Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems, and she stays with us. Let's take a call. Lori is with us from Dodgeville. Hi, Lori.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. I have a question that I was hoping to be answered. Could you tell me how many meat processing plants in the United States are owned by people from China? And can you tell me that, is it true that when meat comes in from, say, Mexico, as soon as it crosses the border, it's labeled as USDA American or United States meat? And how much are we bringing in from other countries?
So the foreign supply of meat, Michelle, can you field that?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about that. So of the four companies, the four meat beef companies that own 85% of the meat processing, two of them are from other countries. They're owned by other countries. JBS is a Brazilian company, and Smithfield is a Chinese company. And when, you know, they don't necessarily have the same goals that a U.S. company might have. I think that's definitely something to be thinking about when it comes to occupational health and safety of our meat processing plant workers, that we there is a set of CDC guidelines out there now for meat processing companies to follow. And whether or not they're actually doing the social distancing that's necessary to protect our workers and our people, for instance, the people at the Green Bay plant, is not clear at this time. I think another question the caller raised was about country of origin labeling, and my understanding is that if meat comes in from another country and then is processed in the United States, it gets labeled as U.S. at this point. That's not an area that I follow closely, so someone else might have a better answer than that than I do.
Let's look outside meat production here for a moment and outside of dairy. How are other Wisconsin commodities like, say, potatoes and beans and corn? How is that doing right now?
I have not heard. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, I can speak to ethanol, though. That is an issue I've asked quite a few questions about at various meetings lately. And part of what's going on with ethanol is that because of low gas prices, there's absolutely no market at all for ethanol. And so the ethanol supply chain is completely backed up. And they are there are some companies switching to making hand sanitizer.
So that they're able to change over their production lines. But meanwhile, no market can certainly mean a backlog. When you look at the supply chain as a whole, and we saw the ramp up of safer at home guidelines, businesses had to respond to close or adjust operations. What happens to the products that were already in the food supply pipeline?
I assume they continue moving forward, although perhaps at a slower pace. Mm-hmm. I was talking with, the social distancing guidelines have slowed everything down, right? So it's not just the meat processing plants that need to slow down and maybe produce, you know, process a little bit less meat to protect the health and safety of their workers, but that's also true in the retail industry. My local grocery has a limit of 30 people at any given time in the store. And that's caused a slowdown in their sales because of, just fewer people coming in at any given time. There's also been a real switch to e-commerce food delivery, and the problem with that is that local stores are not able to make any money. In fact, it's usually a loss for them to do e-commerce, direct delivery of product. They're doing it anyway because it's an important community service right now, but it's not a viable long-term strategy. A bigger company like Amazon can do home delivery through their Whole Foods outlets, in part because they can absorb that loss and find profit elsewhere in the supply chain.
Oh, they subsidize it elsewhere. But yep. Interesting that home delivery is a loss leader for your yep. local grocery store.
Well, and that's why the post office is so important, because they are they're basically doing direct delivery of our mail, and why it's a government function, because there's really not profit to be made in direct delivery.
Jim from Waniwak sent us an email saying that in the past 40 to 50 years, the number of local processing plants, be it meat or milk or vegetables, has declined to the point that farmers have very few sales options and retail outlets have few options as to where they can purchase. Large plants cannot easily shift from processing for institutional to retail processing. We have created, Jim says, a very fragile food system, and this COVID crisis, Jim says, has pointed that out. How would you respond to Jim?
He's absolutely right. It's a huge issue. Any kind of product, any kind of farm product, food product, needs to have a relatively open wholesale market or they can't get in. So if Kroger owns, is the second largest food supply chain in the country, and I want to sell something in my Kroger store, it's almost impossible for me to do that because the supply chain is too big. There are too many rules and requirements to be able to meet their volume requirements. Is just impossible. And so our center has been working on that issue for quite some time, and one of the key pieces we want to investigate is how to put in a wholesale market for multiple farmers to participate in, and also multiple buyers to participate in. So if you're a small grocery, an independent grocery, and you want to purchase product, you don't have to go all the way to Chicago to purchase it. That you could go here in Wisconsin and purchase Wisconsin product.
Michelle, COVID-19 is going to be with us for a while. The situation is not going away. So at the policy level, especially at federal level, what policies coming down the pipeline are you watching that could really impact what we're seeing here on the ground with food?
This is an opportunity to do some transformational change and changes that have been needed for some time and now are critical. I think some of the work I've gotten to do with dairy farmers in the state, Wisconsin Farm Bureau, Wisconsin Farmers Union, National Farm Farmers Organization on supply management and growth management on farms are really, really critical policy options for changing the structure of the markets so that they better reflect the values of people today.
How might price transparency change things for the dairy market?
One of the key problems with any kind of farm sales, food sales, is this idea of price discovery. How do you find out what people are paying for? When you go to the farmer's market, you can walk around the booths and see that everyone's charging $3 a pound for asparagus or something, potatoes. And you can't, but when markets get really big and are primarily wholesale markets or processing markets, it's very hard to know what the going rate is. And so that price transparency happens with the assistance of the USDA. One of the things they do is they set some base prices that are based on a survey that they do out of the office in Washington where they call wholesalers and ask them, you know, what is the going rate for barrel cheese? Barrel cheese is what is used in food service, fast food. It's not the kind of cheese you would buy on the shelf at the store. And as a result, it's kind of the lowest grade cheese and the least expensive cheese. And so we don't know what the going rate is for mozzarella cheese sticks, for instance, or for artisan cheese. We don't know what it is for yogurt or some of the other products that are really critical for households, you know, the preferred products that households buy. And that kind of understanding those prices is really critical for setting a fair price for product.
Michelle, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Kate, for bringing up these issues, and I look forward to hearing more.
Michelle Miller is the Associate Director of the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems at UW-Madison. Just ahead, it's On Point. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.